Yes, yes. Welcome to another edition of Conversation of the Heart. It is your boy T-Till. And very, very important series that we're going to start today. The series is called From Caretaking to Take Care. It's pretty much going to be about the caretaking of a loved one, the process, the many different things that we need to be ready for. The very many things that we may not know that we need to be ready for. So this is going to be a three-part series with me and At Debt Free Joel. Today on episode one, we're going to be covering a lot on the initial part, the really tough part, the grief journey. Should definitely be a very loaded conversation because it is something that's really dear to me and Joel. So we're going to get started on this conversation. As soon as my man, oh, there he is. Let's get him in here.
Let's see. My man.
My man.
How you feeling?
Yeah, it's been an interesting couple of weeks, man. You know, was sick for a little bit, but you know, I'm back.
Right.
Yeah, we definitely back.
Is my sound right? Like, is my echo crazy? Like, I'm coming live from Mort's house. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. Nah. Sound. The sound is good. The fedora is always amazing.
Yeah.
You look amazing. You sound amazing. So that's nothing new.
Shut up. You got your ear on. Don't get me started. Shut up.
You know. So normally, when I have Joel on the show, it's all about finance. It's all about money.
Yeah.
Financial literacy. We talk about different subjects for the community. Now, today's episode is going to be a little different.
Yes.
It's going to be very different. First, let me just introduce the topic. Is the name of the series is called From Caretaking to Take Care. What up, Mel? So this is going to be a conversation pretty much about the caretaking of a loved one, a parent, from beginning to end, and everything that's in between.
Right.
And this is a conversation that is really dear to me and Joel. And it's because of Joel is why I'm going to be talking about this today.
Yeah.
He's the only one that can get me to do this. I promise you that. But today's episode is going to be surrounding the grief journey.
Yeah.
And we'll get into the other episodes that we're going to do, and that's going to be geared towards more so finances and things like that, and we're going to get to that. But today, appreciate that. But today, you know, it's going to be about the grief journey, because that's where everything starts.
Yes.
The shock, the awe. But for those of you who don't know, and I'm not sure, there's a lot of people at this point who don't know who you are. You know, you are normally a finance expert, coach, you know, somebody that is really for the community when it comes to really getting their finances together. He works in finance. That was his major, right? Like, you know, and he has the credentials to back up what it is that he always talks about. And you can check him out every day. He's posting something funny, something dope, but always educational for the community. So definitely, At Debt Free Joel, appreciate you. But of course, joining me in this collaborative conversation, which is different for you because you normally talk about finances.
Correct. Yeah, it's different. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So let's get started. So when it comes to finding out, right, the initial shock of a loved one is sick.
Yeah.
Right. What goes through your mind? You know, like what went through your mind? Because, I mean, we both kind of have similar but different stories when it comes to stuff like this, right? But what goes through your mind, like, when you find out that your father's sick, your mother's sick, like, what goes through your mind?
Absolute chaos. That's what happens. And that's the natural reaction for everybody. My father was different. My father was sick for over 10 years.
Yes.
Right? So, or even longer than that, to be honest. But yeah, that was about 10 years. That he was fighting cancer. So at the time of 1994, I believe, or something like that, is when they, you know, are doing little surgeries here and there to take the cancer out and try to, like, work around it. My father never did chemo. So we had about 10 years of him kind of going through it and him kind of telling me behind the scenes, no matter what happens to me, stay in school. It's not a coincidence that, you know, I achieved whatever I achieved. You know, I basically became, like, I had orders, right, that was basically told to me at the time. My mother was different. My mother, for example, got sick during COVID. So as she gotten sick during COVID, she couldn't go to the hospital. She couldn't go to visit the doctor too much. And to be honest, because I'm in Mom's house, she didn't believe the doctors anyway. Okay, let's just keep it a buck. She didn't believe them. So, you know, finally it was the push and a lot of arguing to get her to actually go to the doctor. When we actually got her to go to the doctor and we went to go see her physician, which was like, you know, in a walk-in, they told us, you need to take your mom to the emergency room. I think she has tumors. That was the first. We go to the emergency room. We're there for 14 hours. Anybody who's ever been in the emergency room knows how much that sucks.
Yeah.
Okay? 14 hours for them to tell me at the end, we think your mother has cancer. My mother's exact expression was blank. No reaction. She had literally no reaction. All she wanted to do was go home. She didn't care about any of this. But for me, I know I had to walk outside and scream at the top of my lungs. I know that, right? My brother was there trying to, like, you know, just, you know, relax, let it out. But, like, I kind of knew what was coming, right? And that started the 14 months, right? But for me, that scream, that initial let it out is natural for people. I don't, if someone tells you they hear about someone, a loved one, a parent has cancer and they have no reaction, I'm not about that life. I can't do it. So that initial reaction is that punch in the face. It's absolute chaos because at that point, nothing else matters.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing under the sun.
And I could relate to that, you know, just different variations of my life, you know, down through the years. And it's vulnerable, like, but also for me, each step, I guess, you know, in my life, I found out different things and through different stages of my life, you know, like, I think when I was, you know, I think I could remember when I was 5 years old, my mom being diagnosed with breast cancer. Of course, they didn't tell me, but I remember vividly pictures of, of my mom being in the hospital, but, like, you know, it's fuzzy, right? Like, I don't, you know, I was five, you know, but, like, I remember vividly her being in the hospital, but I don't really put the dots together. Now, when I was 17 now, you know, right after I graduated high school, you know, found out that my dad had lung cancer and he needed to have one lung removed. And it was a 50-50 shot for him to make it through or not. And, you know, come to find out, and I didn't even notice until, you know, years later, but he had that, he knew he had something while I was in my senior year of high school, but he pretty much put it off until I graduated because he didn't want to be a distraction. Which kind of tore me up a little bit later on in life when I found that out. Right, because that's not something that you really want to wait on.
Yeah.
Right? Early detection and things are very, you know, prevalent, you know, to your health and things like that, right? So I was 17. So 17 when I first found this out, I, you know, it was a shock, you know, being, you know, like, you think that your superheroes is just invincible, like, you know, like 17, you know, not really an adult yet, but figuring this whole process out was a gut check, you know, for everybody in the household, including my mother.
Right.
Right. And then also really not, also not understanding what was to come. You know, I think being 17, you really are just trying to get through the surgery part. Like, you know, like, all right, is he going to make it through surgery? Is he going to make it through surgery? Oh, he made it through surgery. And then you kind of, like, don't know. You know, but you don't really know at 17. So, you know, kind of being shocked along the way of, okay, wow, okay, so he made it through. Oh, wow, there's chemo. Okay, well, okay, wow, there's still radiation. Okay, well, so he's not out of the woods yet because he still has to go through those things.
Yeah.
You know, I was seeing that process and seeing how it affected my mom and seeing how it affected the household in a sense of just the grief part of this whole situation.
Because, yeah, you're grieving from the time of the announcement.
Yeah.
And I think that's what most people don't understand. When someone's diagnosed with cancer, you start grieving from that moment.
Right.
Because you just don't know what the other side is going to look like. We all know someone who's died of cancer. So your immediate thought is, oh my God, all hell's breaking loose. It could be stage one for all you care.
Yeah.
You start grieving from that moment right then to the point of all hell breaking loose. And I think a lot of people don't realize that is that with your dad, with you know, everything you had going on with family members in your life, you started grieving immediately.
And I had no, right. And truthfully, I didn't even really understand that until, you want to know what I really understood this? I started having an idea a few years ago. But I really didn't understand it until probably this year. And I'll get to that. But in each stage of my life where, you know, I've gotten news, you know, as far as, you know, 17, my dad, lung cancer. Then at 22, my dad was diagnosed with leukemia. You know, at 22, then I had some experience. But by then, so now now I'm not understanding, well, how does this happen? Like, how does it go from lung cancer to leukemia, right? Like, how does that work? Right, and I'm not understanding why that is, but I have more tools in the tool belt by 22, and now I understand what's next, right? And it's the same thing, right? You know, and fast forward, I think I was 28, then my mom had a brain aneurysm. Again, knew nothing. Now that's new.
Yep.
Now that's a whole new thing. I didn't know what that was.
Yeah, it's another punch.
The doctors are like, well, she had a, you know, and how I found out, like, it was just madness. Again, not really understanding, like, what these things are. I'm like, okay, brain aneurysm. Now I'm Googling stuff, trying to figure this out. You know, okay, well, now it's different. Now there is no diagnosis of stage 1, 2, 3, 4. It's, we're going to have the surgery, and we got to see if she's going to recover, because the brain is not like cancer. There's no definitive anything. You know, it's just, we'll see.
Yeah,
and so you're always waiting and seeing and doing certain things, and then fast forward, you know, to when I'm 32, you know, then my dad got diagnosed with colon cancer.
My mother's anything,
you know, and then after that diagnosis, a couple months later, he passed.
Yep.
To fast forward to just last year, then my mom had two major strokes.
All right.
Again, something new.
Breathe.
Right.
Because,
right,
but that's the thing, right? What you just described, most people, and for those of you who are watching, this is a very adult conversation, because guess what? You all are at some point either know someone or are going to experience someone who's going to go through something this level of traumatic, of cancer. This is real shit. This is either cancer, Alzheimer's, brain tumors, something that's going to mess us up. But one thing that you just laid out, right, that I think is important, is that everything you just laid out, you're still here.
Right.
That's the key. Two black men are having a conversation about what it takes to have family members catch that blow, and you're still here. You know what I mean? Like, if you lay everything out one by one, from your mom to your dad to your mom to your dad to your mom, in sequential order, at certain stages of your life, and you're still here, that means that there's still life to live.
Right.
My mother taught me that.
Mm-hmm.
I watched it in real time.
I watched.
See, that for your dad, did your dad ever do chemo?
Yeah. He had to do chemo for the lung cancer and leukemia and the colon cancer. And in fact, when it came to the colon cancer, they put him on two chemos, one for the colon cancer and then one for the leukemia.
Yeah. See, like, so the thing, what people have to realize about chemo is that it's very abrasive to your body. We've all seen these pictures, these people, they're with tubes in their arms for hours on end. And, you know, my mother had to take like a patch home, right? She had the chemo they did for her, the port. And then they also had, you know, a patch that she had to take home initially. My mother hates the patch more than going to the hospital, because the patch she has to carry this bullshit around all day long. That was like, that's the way she was so upset about this nonsense. And it physically takes a toll on your body. One of the things I think that, did your dad smoke?
Unfortunately, he picked it up in the Army.
Yeah, so one fun fact, right? When my father died, technically speaking, he died from lung cancer, never smoked. What I didn't realize was my father had melanoma. For those of you who don't know, melanoma is usually for Caucasians. Mm. It's not for black people. That was the first time I realized that my grandfather was really white.
Wow.
True story. It's a true story because you're trying to connect the dots. You're trying to figure out, you're trying to understand how someone that you love can get melanoma who's black, mm-hmm. right? Like for, and I'm saying in general terms, I'm sure there's exceptions but to the rule, but that's what it was at the time, that initial shock of trying to figure it out. You mentioned something earlier that made me smile. First thing you did is you went on Google. I would never suggest that, right?
I wouldn't either, but I did.
Yeah, I would never, don't go on Google. Do not go on Google. Talk to a doctor first and then start researching because that's something that I had to deal with, right? Mm-hmm. My mother gets diagnosed with cancer. My brothers have some of the paperwork. They start Googling terms. Next thing you know, I'm hearing dementia this and Alzheimer that. And survivor rate is this percentage. And my mother, I'm like, dog, I don't want to hear any of this. I don't want to talk about it. I don't even want to. All I want to do is whatever she wants to do and prepare. Because that's what I'm good at, right? I can prepare for whatever is coming. But the one thing I'll tell everybody here, and Terrence can probably tell you, there is no way for you really to prepare. You can do everything in the world, and you'll still feel that punch. That punch is coming, right? If it's terminal. If it's a terminal type of cancer, as men, you're built to hold all this crap in, right? That's how it, you know, society has made you, is to hold all this crap in, to try to be the tough guy. Bullshit. You're going to feel the pain and you're going to experience a lot of different emotions that you never felt before.
Yep.
I think, so let me ask you something.
Mm-hmm.
Were you able to talk to your dad? Like while he was going
through? At that time, well, when he first got the diagnosis, when I was young, no. Like, that wasn't the thing at 17. Like, I was just trying to be the man. Like, I was just trying to just hold it down. Like, you know, and I really didn't know what to say, you know, like, to a point.
Yeah.
And then also, I was trying to just hold my mom down, too.
Uh-huh.
As I got older, like, once he started having other things, you know, happen to him as I got older towards, you know, my 30s. Yeah.
So I
definitely talk to him.
So similar with my father, I didn't get that opportunity. I tried. Mm-hmm. One day he called us all to the house in Brooklyn and, you know, he had one of those sessions. My dad was the type of person, he's going to tell you exactly what he's going to do. And he does. Right. And he's the type of person, that's where I get it from, where like, he'll tell you what to do. Like it's just, that's how it works. Mm-hmm. And we get to Brooklyn and we sit around a table and he's like, this is your opportunity for you guys to vent. Now, I didn't know at the time that I had built up aggression towards this, right? So it was like, you know, I went around the table, everybody's been talking, brothers are talking. By the time it got to me, I could not articulate anything. All I did was cry. I couldn't say a fucking word because you have so much you want to say. Remember, I'm in college at the time. Mm-hmm. This was 2004-ish.
Mm-hmm.
He knew he was dying. And my father did no chemo. So he literally knew, I'm not doing this. Like, I'm not going through the nonsense. My mother, I did have a full-blown conversation with her. I'll tell you guys what this woman told me. I asked her two questions. I told this story at the funeral. I asked her two questions. One, if you were to die, or when you die, what do you want people to remember you by? You know what my mother said? She said, remember the fact that me and your father tried as hard as we could for you children. That we did the best that we could and that your father was a good husband. They've been separated for, at that point, it was like 12, 13 years. Mm-hmm. And it was turmoil before that. And it was first thing. Second thing I asked my mother, I said, do you have any regrets? She said, no. To everybody watching, if I were to ask you, if someone were to walk into your room right now and say, you're going to die, you have cancer, but it's stage four, stage five, like there's no saving you at this point. Your body's going to shut down. We're going to sprinkle in some dementia towards the end. You can't go travel. You can't go do any of these types of things. And let me ask you, do you have any regrets? Every single person on this live would have regrets. Everyone. So use this live as a reminder, not to just live a YOLO life, because that's careless, but to live a life in such a way that you have no regrets at the end, that you can look your kids in the face, that you can look other people in the face, that you can look your parents in the face, if it, God forbid, it was reversed, and say that you lived your life.
Good point. So finance our future, I know. So I'm just reading about your mom. Sorry to hear about your mom. You know, I hope she, you know, is she doing better with the strokes? I know the strokes is a real tough thing.
That's how close my mom was. Seriously.
Yeah, you know, so the one thing I would say is I didn't have that conversation with my dad, you know, about, you know, is he happy or not? Because truthfully, we didn't know he was going to pass. We were just trying to, you know, get him the help that he really needed. But the one thing throughout this whole process for me was, I wish I got therapy earlier, but I didn't even really realize that I really needed it until the last couple years.
Yeah.
Because there was a point in my life that I've seen so much suffering with my parents that I started to develop a fear of every kind of sickness that you could possibly think of.
Yep.
There was a point in my life where I said, I don't even want to get married. I want to have kids. You know why? Because I don't want them to see what I'm seeing. I don't want them to deal with what I'm going through.
Yeah.
Right? And then when I was talking to somebody and they told me, I shared this with you and I'll share this with the live. You got me sharing this stuff. So the person said, you've had a broken heart for 20 years. Over 20 years.
Facts.
And you don't even know it.
Facts.
Because of all the suffering that you've seen throughout your life.
And you carry.
And I used to live a very YOLO life too. You know why I used to live a YOLO life? Because I internalized a lot of what they went through. Mm. And I said, this might be me. So I'm going to live YOLO.
Yeah.
Money, I don't care. I'm spending money. But did not understand that was trauma. Speaking like that was trauma. And I had no clue.
Yeah.
I had no clue.
I had built up aggression.
Mm-hmm.
Right, with my dad. My dad left in 94. Or 92. I know, 94. Okay, so your superhero leaves the house. Then your superhero is telling you on the phone every single day, no matter what happens to me, stay in school. So you knew the shit was coming.
Mm-hmm.
My father never got to see me graduate college. The one thing he wanted to see, was graduate college. I never got that. And then he dies. True story. My father passes away. I don't even cry. Not because I don't love him. It's because I'm a robot.
Mm-hmm.
I just move right into whatever he told me to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I take off. Right? So you go from taking the MCATs to taking the GMATs to doing your MBA to doing your CFA. Mm-hmm. And then when you're done in 2013, you turn around and go, I have no more instructions.
Yep.
That's when it hits.
Mm-hmm.
My father died in 2004. I said 2013. That's 9 years later is when it kicked in.
Okay? Yep.
My mother looked at me like I was nuts. Because she was like, I don't understand. Like you're just kind of like in an abyss because you don't know how to get out of it. And then by the time I started doing therapy, I think, what was it, 2020. By the time I started doing that, it took another 7 years to the point where you get to the point where you could look somebody in the face and go, something's off. The radar's off. One of the things that saved me during this process was that, and this is a message for all of you that are watching, if you ever have to be a caregiver, if you ever have someone in your life that's diagnosed with a sickness that you know is going to affect you, seek therapy.
Please.
Please.
It's necessary. Finance her future. Listen, you said your mom is now a diabetic. Listen, I've had to help manage my mom's diabetes for over 15 years. I know a lot about it. It goes hand in hand with strokes and high blood pressure and a lot of just different things. Just do your best to make sure that her eating habits are really good.
Yes.
Diabetes is nothing to play with. And it's a sneaky silent killer. And I'm not saying that to be, you know, morbid or anything like that. I'm telling you just by experience, just make sure, you know, and if she's in the hospitals or wherever she is, make sure that they're monitoring her sugar, because sugar and high blood pressure is what landed my mom with two strokes. You know,
and
I'm telling you right now.
Yeah. And make sure you're taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
You can't take care of somebody if you're not taking care of yourself. Trust me, I know it.
Yeah. So the one thing is, even when you're taking care of yourself, I remember, you know, because you're an individual too, you know, and as men, you want to move and shake. And yeah. I remember being a certain age, I think I was 27 or something like that, or 28, and I was... And I'm like, yo, like, and I'm moving, I'm shaking, and, you know, my parents been sick since I was 17, and I'm like, yo, you're like, sometimes you stay, like, you see how, like, you went back to stay with your mom, like, I stayed, you know, with my mom, you know, and a lot of times, like, when you're young, you know, like, everybody tells you, yo, man, you're a grown man, like, you're supposed to, you know, yo, be out of your mom's house, and your parents' house, and just go ahead and do you. So I was like, yo, you know what, I was having a good portion where, like, I felt that my parents' health was in decent shape enough for me to leave.
Yeah.
I said, yo, I'm out now. I said, I did pay my dues. I'm out. I'm gonna move. You know what I'm saying? You know, we girls are like, yo, man, yo, you gotta be out your mama house. You know what I mean? But I can't date nobody. You know how that works.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm like, yo, my parents' office is intact. I'm gonna go. Mom has a brain aneurysm. I'm stuck. Not stuck, but now I'm back in the same. Well, how am I gonna leave?
Yes.
Right? Yes. Now you end up being... Now I'm 28 going to 30s, and I'm like, I'm still in my parents' house. I want to leave, but I'm always caretaking.
Yeah.
Always caretaking.
Yeah.
Right. And then you think about your own life, like your own things that you want to do, and everything seems to be put on hold, and you got to deal with that too. Yeah. You're like, how do you feel about yourself?
Yeah.
Right. As a man, you want to be on your own. As a man, people like Terrence, you don't want to leave your house, and not understanding and not knowing.
Yeah.
I got stuff to do here, bro. Like, this ain't what you think.
It was, I know for me personally, right? If you told me now, and we were just joking about this before we got on the live, like, I had to go find, like, where I put some of the crap that I normally used to do these things with, right? Because I'm not in Brooklyn anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
I am in Queens. I am at Maud's house. And that's how I say it. Like, I am not at home. And there's a... I know for me personally, when I went for broke is when I left. When I left Brooklyn, that was when I completely went for broke and said, there's no turning back. Because I know once I leave here, I know why I'm showing up. My mother hated every part of this process. Because something I think folks need to understand is that your parents, for the most part, don't want you doing shit for them. They don't want you buying them stuff sometimes. Right, my mother was like, no. But sometimes parents like you take them on vacation, you do nice things for them. But when it comes to actually taking care of them, oh, no. You're missing with a dynamic.
Yep.
And then your mother's looking at you saying, my son is going to give up his life for me.
Yep.
No parent will ever, I hope everybody understands what I just said. Your parents knew that. I guarantee you, your parents knew before you left that house, finally, that my son isn't leaving because he's concerned about me. And nobody, no parent ever wants that. But that's the responsibility that we have as adults. Again, this live is for people who are adults. It's your job. Your job as a family, your job as a caregiver, your job as someone who is there for your parents just like they were for you. It is your job to make sure that if they leave this earth for whatever reason, if you have the ability, that you treat them with dignity, honor, respect on the way out. They're not going to like it because guess what? Some of you have children. Here's what I told somebody the other day, T. I said, picture your daughter taking care of you. The girl said, oh my God, no, no, no. What are you talking about? My daughter taking care of me? Oh no. I said, you don't know Maud. Maud was different. That lady was built a lot differently. My mother took care of her. My mother was the oldest of her siblings. Let's get that out the way. Right? My mother was the oldest of her siblings, which means she was the one that took care of everybody else. And then I'm the youngest of her children. Do you understand the gap that is? And now you have to take care of them?
Mm-hmm.
This is why it's important that we have these conversations, because I think at the end of the day, a lot of us are going to have to be in this position. I saw someone put, I think it was Todd put that shit earlier, caregiver burnout. Who's taking care of you that while burnout, you're doing
that burnout different? And sometimes what you see, you know how people always say, be careful what you see and what you watch, right? I remember, you know, seeing these traumatic things, seeing my dad go through chemo, right? You know, seeing like the frailness and seeing certain things. I remember when my mom had the aneurysm, I had to help teach her how to eat. I had to feed her. I had to do these things, right, that doesn't seem natural, like help her to walk, teach her how to walk again, talk again, right? Like as if she's a child, and even sometimes you have to deal with even their attitudes and saying, well, I'm not, you know, I'm not a child and I'm not this and I'm not that, but you're doing what you need to do for them. That is trauma, and people don't really understand that, what they're seeing. Like it's not a natural thing to help your mom or dad teach them how to do the things that they taught you as a baby to do.
Here's the one thing I would disagree with you is it actually is natural. It's not natural in the Western cultures. Like mm-hmm. It's not right in like, you know, in Creole, it's not natural in Etazoni, right? It's not natural in the United States.
Right.
It's, if you think about it, it's actually the circle of life, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing I realized was that my mother was very resistant to the whole thing. What you just said, like you have to feed them. Like I fed my mother. Mm-hmm. I cleaned my mother. I don't need to get any more specific.
Right.
I wiped my mother down. You are getting very personal with this person.
Yep.
And there's nothing you can do. And the one thing that folks have to realize is that you have a decision to make at that point. Someone told me once, they said, my therapist actually, one of the things he said to me was that in our culture, we tend to outsource this part of the problem. We don't want to take care of sick parents or sick grandparents. So we send them to nursing homes because we cannot physically deal with that because we didn't grow up around it.
Mm-hmm.
We see it on TV and it hurts and it's sad. We don't want to do that. But let me tell you, one of the reasons why today I can look at you right in the face, in the middle of Maud's house, right above the room where she passed away, true story, with no shame, no guts, no nothing, is because I was able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I was actually able to give my mother that route. So that's the one thing I would say is that Terrence is right as it pertains to our culture as the United States. We tend to outsource this type of stuff. But there is a level of humility. There's a level of, like I had to physically change as a person, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, mm-hmm. as a person. Mm-hmm. Right? So did you, to help your mom.
Yep.
Right? I remember I had to feed my mother. I remember I had to pick my mother up from the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
That was that moment when she looked me dead in my face. I looked at her. I said, "Lady, We gotta make this shit work. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And from that day on, it became very personal. So now, I can look back and go, that's cool. And you can tell that side of the story. You can say, no matter how traumatizing it was, and you'll take care of yourself, you can now normalize it for the next person who may want to give their parents the same gift.
Right. Which is very true. And you know what I didn't care anymore when, you know, I was saying earlier where, like, you know, I wanted to move out of my house, you know, at a certain age and do certain things, but my parents could get sick. And I was, you know, being younger, I used to care what people thought about me. I, as a man, still being in my parents' house, yeah. But them not understanding that I was caretaking too. You know what I stopped caring about that? Was when, like I said, I was managing my mom's diabetes. And, you know, I remember waking up one morning, and normally my mom was up at a certain time. She's doing certain things, and I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
One day she didn't get up, and I'm like, okay, maybe she's extra tired. She's a night owl like me. Maybe she just went to bed 2 or 3. I don't know. But something told me to just go into the room. So I'm knocking on the door, go in the room. My mom is almost in a diabetic coma.
See.
And had I moved out, and here's the thing. My dad is normally alert to a lot of different things, but here's the thing. He was going through chemo at the time, so he was in another room, guess what, doing what? Sleeping.
There you go.
Right? So I was there, and she was about to go into a diabetic coma. And I had to pretty much get her back to life and health. And if I had not been there, she probably would have died that day because my dad was in there sleeping because of the chemo, and he's being drained.
Yeah.
That was the day that I said, you know what? I don't even care what people think about me. I don't care what people say about me. I have to be here.
Yeah. Fuck, they gonna say, like, this is just being me being absolutely real with this conversation. After my mother passed away, okay, I remember family members, you know, wanting to make sure they do the funeral a certain way, this, that, and the third, yada, yada, yada. I couldn't give a shit, okay? Couldn't give a rat's ass about what these people's opinions were, personally, because that phone never rang when she was sick. So personally, I don't care about your opinion at that moment. You see what I'm saying? Like, what you realize as a caregiver is that you have a job to do. Someone's life is in your hands. Many of you who are watching right now have children. I don't have a kid, at least that I know of, right? I don't have a kid. Terrence, do you have a kid?
Check your vacation
right.
spot.
Right, that's what I'm saying, but no, but do you have a kid?
No, right. You know what I mean.
So that was the first time that both of us had someone's life in our hands besides our own.
Mm-hmm.
That's the closest thing I ever got to feeling like a parent.
Yep.
Closest thing. So that when you have someone's life in your hands and you know they can't do for nothing, at that point, that's when you realize you don't give a shit no more. You don't care about people's opinions. You don't care about trying to put on a facade. You don't care about how it makes you feel. You have a job to do, and it's your job to get it done. And then when it's over, and obviously while you're going through it, but when it's over, you can look back and you can say, I did my job. I did the best that I could, given God's grace.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. But please understand, for everybody who's listening, either you're going to go through it, or somebody you know that you love is going to go through it, and it's extremely painful.
And it's very true. And the one thing that I will say is, learn from me, right? Like, go out and get help a little early.
Yeah.
You know, I think being 30 something, you know, I started to get help in my mid to late 30s, you know, but that's once I already had my body break down on me, you know, a few years ago. Like,
yeah.
I went through mental hurdles and trauma and certain things, and I suffered because I didn't get the help. And a lot of times we have this thing to where we can take it all on, right? Like, we'll just take everything on. It, you know, it's perfectly okay. I'm good until you're not.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And if I could empower somebody to do this, it's go see somebody, talk this through with somebody, you know, that's a trained professional that can help you through grief, that can help you process just what you're feeling and what you're going through, because it's heavy.
Yes.
It's heavy on your heart,
It's heavy on your mind. It's heavy on your back, because these are heavy issues. And mind you, these aren't even your own personal problems.
Yeah.
That's not even it. It's these are, you're dealing with somebody else's heaviness.
Yeah.
And you have heaviness too from your own personal problems. You got jobs, you got kids, or you have things that you have going on in life that you have to deal with and too. Yes.
Okay.
The whole conversation is a trigger. I'm just telling you right now, Joe.
No, it's the truth.
It's a whole trigger.
No, no. You nailed it. Like, at the end of the day, as you're helping someone, you're carrying the burdens of everything you ever did that you're not over yet. And now you're carrying that person physically, mentally, spiritually, and emotionally. Okay? And you have to balance that. And everybody's going to call you and ask you, how can they help? Well, guess what? There's not a lot people can do in that situation. They can send you food. They can check in on you. They can say they're praying for you. All those things are important. But there are times when it's just you and that person. And that person don't want to see you at that point.
Very true.
Like, it is a very big grind. Here's something to consider. I'm watching all the people who are joined. The majority of people who joined are women. Statistically speaking, do you know that the caregivers in this life are women?
Women.
Okay. Which means all of you now who are watching, maybe 50% of the people who joined this live will experience this. Two black men are having a conversation to tell you, statistically speaking, you're going to go through this. Either you or your best friend. You have to, like, there's a realization about life when it comes to this. Listen, my mother never smoked, never drank, ate the same thing every day, walked to church. That was her life as an adult. Okay, she gave her a complete life to God, the entire thing. I'm not talking about, like, you know, like, ha ha ha, she's religious. No, my mother had Jesus' beeper number. Okay? Like, she was that type of religious. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone in this house is a picture of Jesus somewhere. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
She got caught. So when the Lord tells you it's your time to go, it's your time to go. Right? And if you have a parent that you're going to have to deal with at that point, you're going to have to mentally be able to prepare for that. You know, you're going to have to mentally be able to deal with that. And Terrence brought up an excellent point. Learn from us. If you start to have that problem, one of the first things you should do besides pray is find someone you can vent to every 2 weeks or every week, whatever the case is, to get that off your chest. Because remember, he said it best. You're carrying all the shit that you deal with. Then you're carrying somebody else's shit. And your job is not to do this. And you will, because you're going to lose it at some point. You're going to snap. But your job is to maintain that and let this person go out comfortably.
And sometimes they may not even go out, you know, and that's the thing. Like right now, you know, full transparency, my mom had, she had two strokes, and right now she doesn't have any kind of use of the left side of her body. She's bedridden.
Yeah.
And those visuals are even tough to deal with.
Yes.
Just the visualization of certain things to where you're just sitting there and you're like, you can't believe like what you're seeing. And even though I've been through this multiple times, you still cannot believe
it's happening.
What you're seeing,
yeah.
Because it's something new.
Yeah.
It's like something new all the time. You just, like, a cycle is just repeating itself, and you get tired. You get weary. Like, let's not even, like, I'm not even going to sugarcoat it. Like, you get really tired. Mentally, emotionally, yeah. You get drained.
Yeah.
And you start to reflect on a lot of stuff in life yourself, because it's like the mortality is even staring you in the face.
Right.
Right? Because you're constantly having this image of your superheroes. Now, in these positions, and you're saying to yourself, "Oh, these are my superheroes, and they're in this position, man. What's left for me?" Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, and it's a tough thing to see, and I don't think people realize that it really hurts the people around the person that's going through. It hurts you. It hurts you, the caretaker.
Yes.
It's a lot to go through to see them in a state of hurt, agony, pain. Sometimes people say things, you know, sometimes they say things, I don't want to live anymore, or I don't want to do this, and they get frustrated and they say things, and it hurts you to the core, yep. because you're like, man, how can you say that? But yep. you understand why they're saying it, but it still doesn't sit right within your spirit. And if it does, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
But there's just certain things that just don't hit right within your own spirit. And we're talking about this from a grief perspective. But soon we're going to talk about this now from a business perspective, an administrative perspective,
yeah.
right, and a financial perspective in the next episode. And we'll get to that. But these things are heavy, and they're responsibilities
yeah.
that we have when it comes to your parents, your grandparents, whatever the case is, and sometimes even a child. You know, I know somebody who had to deal with caretaking for the child who was terminally sick.
Yeah.
Right? And these are which I can't fathom, right? But these are the things that really happen. And if you're not aware of your own mental health when you're going through these things, you'll end up sick yourself. You'll break down yourself.
Easily.
And it may not even happen when you think it's going to happen. It may happen after it's all said and done and you think you have a breather. And then now you are sick and you're breaking down.
I would say a few things, right? So the first is you have to understand that. So let's say even for your mother, right? One of the things I used to talk to my mother about all the time, especially when she was, you know, really sick. Every day I used to walk in her room and go, Ma, I have no idea how you're still alive. But if you're still alive, God wants you here. Start praying. That I kept reminding that person. Right, my mother was never scared of death, but if she was, she never showed it. That doesn't mean she didn't have her moments of slip. You see what I'm saying? So I reminded her every day as a person of faith, God is not done with you yet. So keep praying. The second thing I did was I had a reminder. So I have like a little bracelet that says mercy. That was my reminder every day. Give that person mercy. Right? They're the ones that are dealing with the death. Think about it. We're talking about this from our perspective as caregivers, as people who have to see our loved ones sick. There's still another person in this equation that's even worse, and that's the person who's sick.
Yep.
So you got to give that person mercy. Remember, you have your bullshit, you have their shit. And unfortunately, theirs, if you're trying to do the best that you can, is going to weigh on you. It's going to weigh on you. And you try to give that person as much mercy as possible in that situation, because you don't know what mental health issues they're going through.
Yep.
I had to deal with dementia,
mm-hmm.
which is yep. you have the sickness, the frailty, and then you also have the dementia.
Yep.
Where your mom could catch you with something and say something. You're like, what in the entire, you're right. So yep. I think you got to understand that you're never prepared for that type of conversation. You're not prepared for that type of scenario with your mom, with your dad, with your loved one, with your kid. But the one thing I would tell as advice to everyone, and including you, Terrence, God's not done with your mom yet. So if that's the case, you keep fighting. And then whatever happens, no matter what happens, you walk away and say, I'm going to do it until the Lord tells me something different. Mm-hmm. Right? That's what it is. You do everything in your power to take care of what you got to take care of. You give your brother as much support as you can. You visit as much as you can. You talk positively as much as you can. You take those hits as much as you can. But God's not done with it yet. And that's how I looked at it every day. And then I mm-hmm. called when God took her.
Yep.
Like I was there, I watched it happen. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when God decides is when God decides. But until then, like Kobe, like, right? Like
yeah.
I'm not happy. I don't care. I didn't lose the game yet. I'm gonna keep shooting.
Right. And also, so the one thing I'll say is be careful what you, like the cross you choose to die on, in a sense of, I remember when my dad died, and I said to myself, my mom is grieving like no other. And I said, it's my responsibility to ensure that my mom does not die.
Yes.
I took on God's role, yeah. Right?
Not your role.
Right? And I said, if she dies, it's on me. Because when people are married for so long, it's like you always, you know, like sometimes they go back to back.
Yeah.
And I said, yo, if she passes away, it's my fault. And I said, I got to do everything I can to ensure that that doesn't happen on my watch.
I'll tell you.
That wasn't right to do.
I'll tell you something crazy. My dad's last words to me were, take care of your mother.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? My dad tells me that all the time. Correct.
So when my mother got sick, you know what I realized on some realness? I'm pretty religious, but I held my mother higher than I did my faith.
Mm-hmm.
My mother's sickness reversed it. So like what you just said, right? If my mother gets sick, it's on me. I'm playing God. It's not going to work with Maud, right? Like, it's not going to work. My mother's going to cuss you out. Like, it's not... It's just, mm-hmm. That's not how she's built. So you just said the same thing where at the end of the day, you put this unrealistic burden on your shoulders that you're going to do whatever it takes to keep this person alive. That's not your job. You're
right.
Do your job, which is what's best for the person.
Yep.
God wants to call your parent, your child, your grandparent, whoever. That is not your effing choice.
Right.
And that is what I learned.
And that's what I learned in a sense of when I took on that responsibility, I took and it was an unfair, realistic pressure on my stance to say, like, if she passes, it's my fault. And that would have been a huge burden to bear. But then a few years later, you know, my dad passed in 2016. So now a few years later, he has 2 strokes. And I'm like, You cannot take on certain levels of that type of responsibility when it's not really your responsibility to bear. Your responsibility is to take care, but you're not really in charge, obviously, of when they live or when they die. But we have this thing that it's just you don't want them to pass away. You don't want them to go through anything. So you say, yo, it's all on me. And it's not all on you. Like I said, learn from me.
Yeah.
If you're going through something like this right now, it's not on you to prevent certain things from happening. It's to care for them while they're going through.
Yeah.
But you'll never be able to prevent it unless, I mean, of course, like if it's something about their health and, you know, that's different, then you can help them along the way, give them healthy meals, do all of the things like that. But when it comes to the actual burden of them living or dying, it's not on you.
You're not God. That's that, and you have to realize that no matter how strong you are, there's certain things that are going to be outside of your control, and unfortunately, you know, there's nothing you can possibly do about that. Because at the end of the day, I mean, most parents know that, right, with their kids. They do the best that they can with their kids, but there's always that moment of chaos, and your job isn't to prevent the chaos. Your job is to adapt to the chaos as much as you can. Right. But that's to me is what I learned. Terrence knows me. I am a control freak. OK, no. Like I am the Peyton Manning of finance. You know what I'm saying? Like I have every play, everything. I am 10 steps ahead before you walk through the effing door. And I got my ass handed to me on multiple occasions because you cannot prepare for something that God is not intending for you to understand. It's not your job. And that's something that I learned with my mother. My mother was, like I said, she was extremely religious. But I tell you what, and I know we're coming close on the time. I'll tell
you. No, we're not. No, keep going. Now, are we going?
Okay.
We're good.
I'll tell you what, though. That woman's faith is what allowed her the ability, in my personal opinion. My mother never touched morphine. Never. The only thing that she had to control her pain was Tylenol. I am not shitting you. I'm serious. Tylenol. My mother passed away in her house, in her room, on her bed, in her clothes, with her son in the room, with no machines hooked up.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't die like sloppily either, right? Like that's a conversation for another day. As actually how that transpired, but like there are certain things you're not going to be able to understand in this process. But what you need to understand is that you're strong enough to do it. That's
right.
That's what this conversation's about for everybody. Again, I see a lot of women here. There's a lot of this going to fall on your shoulders. There's gonna, some men this may fall on their shoulders, especially the ones who are close to their parents, close to their moms. Here's a fun fact. Most of us, the first woman we love in our life is our mom.
Period.
Okay? So you're talking about someone who we will blow the entire earth up for if we had to. So you have to understand that you're not going to feel prepared, but you're going to be able to handle it. But you have to take care of yourself in the process. There's going to be triggers. There's going to be things. You can't sit there and drink every night. I'll tell you that much. That ain't going to work. Can't eat like shit. Got to work out. Got to do the best you can. You got to be able to separate yourself sometimes.
And I think that's a big struggle for a lot of us too, because a lot of us stress eat. I'm guilty. You know, I think when I was younger, it was, yo, let me get this bottle. You know, like when I was younger, I was like, let me get this bottle, and I'm going to keep it pushing.
Yeah.
You know, but that's not the way to go. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you're really going to try to attack this in a healthy way, you got to have one, you know, a good village too. You know what I'm saying? Have a good village around you. And the one thing that a good friend of mine, while I was going through this process, I was trying to do everything on my own. It was just a mess. And he looked at me and he was like, well, why didn't you tell me? And I was like, you know, I didn't want to bother you. You know what I mean? I got that machismo. I got that. Yeah, I'm a guy. I don't want to bother you. And he was like, you got to stop. And he said, and utilize your resources.
Yes.
He said, whatever they may be, utilize your resources. He said, if there's a friend that's willing to help, utilize them. If they're willing to help you,
yeah,
right, to do certain things, to take some things off of you,
mm-hmm.
And I realized that was true, because then once he found out that he was like, you know what, your mom is in the hospital, your dad's in chemo, I'm gonna pick up your dad, take him to chemo so that you can be at the hospital with your mom.
Yes,
and I was like, wow, you know, the relief from that, like releasing the idea that you have to be the end-all be-all for everything that goes on around you.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, for me, because I'm the guy, you know, this is what I do. I got to take it all on. But you're taking on so much. If you have a good village of people around you to help and aid in certain things, utilize them.
Yeah.
Utilize a therapist. You have control over that one.
Yeah.
Utilize a therapist. These are things that can help you. You can pray. You know what I'm saying? These are things that you can't control yourself, but you have to release this idea that you have to be everything in a situation that's almost impossible to be everything for.
And I learned that the hard way, right?
Me too.
By choice and also by necessity, right? I joked about it. I was like, you know, I'm my mother's consigliere, right? For those of you who know what that means, like if you have a mob boss, there's usually an advisor. That's usually the closest to the mob boss. And that consigliere is the one that is the one that keeps the peace. That's the one that brings information to the boss, right? But you're not the boss. But you do everything the boss tells you to do. Like that was my mother. My mother was the boss. I was never supposed to be the boss, right? So I'm used to handling my mother's affairs on my own. This is how it's been for 19 years. Something happens in the house, I take care of it. She needs something, I take care of it. She needs a ride, I got that. Whatever the case is, right? You're used to this. Now your mother's going through the worst challenge of her life. You grip up, right? You got the two grenades in your hand, like you got the war paint on you, like whatever happens, happens. And you start to realize that this isn't normal, right? That there's one thing to take on helping the bills of the house. This is another, you try to do the best that you can financially. But when you have the emotional, physical, spiritual, emotional, all of that comes in at one time, it is a lot to deal with. I'm not going to lie to you that it's not a lot. Somehow I managed. I'm not going to say it was probably the best idea. But given the resources and things that I had, you had outlets. I had friends. I had people check in on me. I had people do whatever it takes and people pray with me and call me and whatever the case is. You know, so I had a system around me, but when you're dealing on the day-to-day operations, it's kind of like boxing, right? It's kind of like UFC. You got people in the corner, but you're fighting in the ring.
Yep.
And when you get back to the corner, they're like, yo, shit, you're losing your fucking mind. Like, what are you doing? Like, it's that type of process. Many of us want to take it on our own. Many of us want to be the one that they can hang their hat at the end of the day and say, yeah, that was me. What you realize at the end is that all that shit don't matter. Because if you did it selfishly for yourself, you're not doing it for the person.
Right. And right.
That goes out. If you really want to do something for somebody, then you're always going to do something that's the best for them.
Yep.
And that's the key, right? If you always approach it what's best for them and you do the best that you can, then you're okay. But if you're doing it just to be like, yeah, I got this, nobody gives a fuck. And we all know it's bullshit.
Mm-hmm. And these are the things that you learn, I think, along the way, you know, with this whole journey, because this whole thing is a journey. Like I said, I've been dealing with this since I was 5 years old, you know what I'm saying? But I've been really dealing with this since I was 17. And, you know, talking over 20 years later, every season of my time doing that looked different.
Yeah.
And so even though, like, I have lots of experience doing this, each time that this has happened in my life, you would think that it's like, oh, you should be used to it, or it's always new. It's always a different feeling. And as you get older, the feelings are different.
Yes.
When I was 17, the feelings are completely different now that I'm, you know, 38, right? Like, it's night and day how I feel about it. And the one thing is acknowledging that I have feelings. You know, in my late 30s, I have feelings, bro. Like, when I was 17, I was a machine.
Yeah.
I didn't care. Like, I just do what you got to do. But especially as you get older and you've gone through a lot of things and you've seen a lot of trauma and you've been through just life, you start to realize, like, yo, I really have feelings about all this stuff. Like,
yeah,
and I always have.
Yeah.
But it hits differently now.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if you've been, as a man, you've been programmed, right? Like, to just think a certain way and be a certain way. You know, but the joke I always have with women is like, I don't understand men. Well, I don't know. I don't either. I can't help you. You know what I'm saying? Like, we think differently. Oh, he's not emotional. You're talking about every single man on planet Earth. I don't know what to tell you. Right. We are weird human beings. It takes a lot for us to, like, get to that point where we can acknowledge our feelings and acknowledge who the hell we are. You know, you bottle things in, like, for a long period of time. And then now you're trying to do the best that you can. But you're like the person, you're the trampezi artist, right? The guy that's on the fucking the rope and you got the little thing. All it takes is a piece of wind, bro. And you're that's it. It's over for you. So if you're not good with your feelings, if you're not good with your emotions, if you're not good with who you are spiritually, mentally, physically, emotionally, you cannot handle those situations. And that's why a lot of people outsource them, right? That's why a lot of people, they'll put somebody in a nursing. You know, if you guys know who are nurses in nursing homes and they say the family drops the person off and never comes and visits?
Yeah.
Fuck. Hospice care, all these different types of things. People don't even show up. They don't call. You would think if you're going through all hell, that phone would be ringing every day, someone's checking up. Nope. No. People go about their lives because we're selfish people. It just is what it is. Like, it's nothing personal. But when you're going through those type of things, there are not a lot of people around who are going to be checking on you all day long. No, it doesn't happen that way. You think that? No, it doesn't. So you got to understand that even as a man, and for some of you, as women, yeah, sure, you're emotional, but are you able to handle the emotion under complete chaos? That's the key. It's not just being emotional. It's handling it while the fucking world is burning and being able to steady the ship and move forward. Most of us can't do that until we realize we can, because you have to become someone completely different to do that. My mother was the toughest woman I have ever met in my life. Whoever you think is tough, my mother was worse. Like, she was worse. But you had to, it was the unstoppable force versus the immovable object, and I lost. I lost. Like, yeah. But I'm telling you, you have to tap into certain emotions. You got to be able to be comfortable with yourself. If you notice, the common theme is always the same with us. If and when you're ever in that situation, you're going to need help. Spiritually, you're going to need help. Physically, you're going to need help. Emotionally, you're going to need help. And guess what? Mentally?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's a fact. And so I'm going to ask, I'm going to pause on this and ask the people, you know, because I kind of want to gear up for the next episode. And I know we were talking about doing it on YouTube.
Yeah.
As far as just pre-recording it and putting it out. But I want to ask the people who are on this live, you know, the next episode is going to really be about how to navigate these tough conversations with your loved one. Because here's the one thing that we do, especially in this community, the one thing that we do is we beneficiary everything to death. So we are prepared for death in the sense of beneficiaries. Oh, I think my name is on the account in case she passes away. But we're not prepared for sickness in terms of business, administratively,
yeah,
financially. We're not prepared for sickness and the things that should be in place for the loved one before they get sick.
Right.
So the next episode is going to be about navigating those conversations, what you need to do. We're going to cover healthcare proxies, power of attorneys, life insurance, of course, beneficiaries, name on the accounts. All of these things we're going to cover in the next episode of this series. So what I want to ask the people who's watching, do you want us to have this conversation live? Or do you want, or does it matter, or we'll just pre-record it and put it out to you? So let us know what you want us to do with this conversation. And for the next episode, because we were going to go through YouTube, pre-record it, and then put it out to the people. But if, you know, it seems like you guys are pretty engaged with this whole situation and with this whole conversation. So if you want to have this conversation live, just let us know in the comments, and that's what we'll do.
Yeah. Well, whatever folks want, I think is appropriate. I think the gift and the curse with the live is that you're still going to be restricted to a certain amount of time. Right. So, you know, at least with a YouTube video, you can kind of put it out there. But I don't think it makes.
Well, I'm going to put this out there on YouTube as well.
And yeah, send it to you. Record. Yeah, I think it's important to have a written record, because I think there's a lot of aspects of this that people don't know. Right. So a lot of folks that may follow me understand that a lot of things are about finance. Wait till you understand what the hell that entails. Right. When you walk into your mother's house or your dad's house or your grandparents' house and say, all the bills run through me now. Do you understand?
Good luck.
That's a chin check move. So there's a lot of that. Beneficiaries will probably, I had to learn all that in real time. And like I said, you have to adapt. So yeah, I'm down for that. Whatever y'all want to do.
Yeah. So just so everybody understands, even though when we do these live, I take these videos and then I put it out on YouTube and I'm going to give it to Joel and he'll put it out on his YouTube channel and my YouTube channel. And so even when we have these lives, it's still going to end up on YouTube anyway. It's going to end up on all audio podcast platforms as well. So just so we know that, you know, even with this conversation, there will be references
It'll be posted on IG and as well on YouTube and all audio podcast platforms. So just wanted to put that out there, but just wanted to just see what you guys wanted us to really do. But just the one thing is, you know.
Actually, I got something for you before we go.
Yeah, I didn't say he was leaving, but go ahead, yeah.
No, what's the why? I got to run soon. But
okay, yeah, cool.
What's one thing that you would leave with people on how to navigate the emotional aspect of caregiving?
Man, it's a good question. I would say when it comes to the emotional part of it, acknowledge that it's really happening. That you're really going through this situation, because there will be sleepless nights, and not because anything more went wrong, but because your mind is racing, and because your mind is going through the what ifs. Your mind is going through a lot of just different changes and different things about the situation. So acknowledging it, seeking help, seeking therapy throughout this process.
Yeah.
Because one, you don't know how long this process is going to last. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes it could be quick, you know, but a lot of times it could last for years.
Yes.
So sometimes people go to cancer and then they go into remission and then they have cancer, you know, again, you know, or they have another cancer, or you think that it's over, but then it's not. Sometimes people change too. Like they go through things and they're no longer the same. You know, like I said, my mom, like when you look at her right now, she's not the same. Yeah. There's certain aspects of the person that's not the same. And you have to deal with that. And that's something, and that's traumatic. That's trauma.
Yes. Yes.
Acknowledging your triggers.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? The one thing is, whether it be, don't get too caught up in covering up your emotion with things, right? Like with work,
yep.
with drinking, with sex, with pills, yep. With those things are easily distractions. Those things are distractions. Acknowledging how you really feel about these things, because it's real. I don't care if you're a man or woman, the feelings are real, the emotions are raw. Like if you got a cry it out, cry it out. If you got to talk it out, talk it out. You know what I'm saying? These things are real life situations that come with real life trauma and triggers.
Yes.
And these are things that you should never, ever mask with something else, because you have issues and problems too on an everyday basis. You have work, you have a relationship, you have kids, you have things that you have going on every day in your life that's real. Yeah. In addition to all of this, there are people right now that are being laid off of work while having parents sick.
That's a fact.
There are things that are going on in your own personal journey that's big enough, that's hurtful enough, and then now you have this on top of it, which is a mound to deal with.
And I think I can't say it better than that. The only thing I would say is, in my very debt-free Joel way, welcome to life. Welcome to life. Welcome. Social media is not real, okay? Not everybody's happy all the time. None of you ever for 14 months.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I put out videos every single day. None of you knew. I never put it out there on social media what was happening. Mm-hmm. So according to all of you, you guys had no idea. You just see me do reels every day. You didn't see me do lives that much, though. You saw me wake up pretty early. You probably saw me crash, and I didn't get back to you guys until much later in the day or maybe early in the morning. But I never put out there, I'm laughing and smiling, right? Well, crashing.
There was a reason why I couldn't do the show. Like, I was doing my show.
Yeah.
I had to stop doing my show.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't manage it. Like, I would start posting up other clips, and I'm just going to say, I don't have it to do a live. I don't have it to give. But let me post these clips that I do because I have enough content. Like, these are real-life things. People are like, yo, what happened to the show? I'm like,
bear with me. But I'm going through life.
Yeah, and I think that's the one thing I'll share with you guys is this, unfortunately, is normal. Yeah. You cannot protect yourself from tragedy. You cannot protect yourself from trauma. You cannot protect yourself from having real tough things happen in your life. But I will leave you again with what my mother told me. My mother buried multiple people. She's paid for her funerals. She's had issues with her husband. She's had issues with her kids, issues with her sisters, issues with her brothers. She's buried. The woman's been through everything. But when you ask her if she had any regrets, she said no. What does that tell you? That tells you that no matter what you have to go through in this life, as long as you put God first, as long as you take care of yourself, as long as you're nice to people, as long as you're a decent human being, it's worth it. But when you are in this position to go through hell, keep going. Don't stop. You are built to go through those things. You are built to be a caregiver. You are built to take care of your family. You are built to deal with the trauma of having someone be diagnosed with cancer or brain tumors or Alzheimer's. Listen, folks, I'm sorry to tell you this. I told somebody this the other day. Look around. Look at all your friends, especially in the social media era, right? Look at all your friends. A lot of them have both their parents alive. Some of them have their grandparents alive. Over the next 10 years, you're going to go to more funerals in the next 10 years than you have for the last 40 years. Good luck. So if you don't have this ready to go, you're going to have hell. And some of your closest friends are going to have to go through what me and Terrence went through. And if it's not you, then you're still going to feel the pain of a friend. And if it is you, then you're going to know what you have to do. I told somebody the other day, make sure you guys understand this. And it doesn't have to be a depressing thing, because there's the point of life is to live. But when God calls you, he calls you. But understand the realization of this. When I turn this off and I go about my business, at the end of the day, we all got to go whenever we all got to go. And that's not our decision.
And that's no truer statements can be said. You know, it is a part of life. It is life. It doesn't make it any easier. It doesn't make it, it doesn't make it great. You know, but we all definitely are going to have to go through these things at some point in life. You know, it's like I said, different stages of my life, very different. Yeah. But they all were hurtful. They all were hurtful. They all were emotionally filled, mental anguish. Like, it gets really real. And the older you get, the realer it gets, because now you're looking at your own mortality saying, yo, I'm almost 40. Whoa, what? I'm 40. What happened? Like, and you're looking at yourself, what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, take care of yourself in this process, because if you falter, if you're not healthy, then what's the hope for them? Who's going to care for them as well?
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing. We also sacrifice ourselves for the sake of them. Like, I'm going to do this. I'm losing sleep. I'm not sleeping. I'm doing all types of things that's not healthy to cope with these things.
Yes.
So what I am saying is, try your best to do it in a healthy way. Use your village. Use a therapist. Use God. Do all of these things to try to ensure that you're going to try to get through this and this whole process in a very healthy way. And if you need to reach out to me, I'm just a DM away. If you got my number, you got my number. You know what I'm saying? But there are people that have gone through this.
And we're, and it's like Joel said, it's two black men really, really being vulnerable about our life, about our situations, about the things that we've gone through. And we're doing it so that it's not on deaf ears, so that we can help somebody, bless somebody, and provide information for our own community, because it's real, it's raw, and it's uncut, but it's our life.
Facts.
And, you know, God bless your mom, Joel, God bless your dad, Joel, and, you know, they raised a real one. I'm proud of you, bro. And we'll get going on episode 2 probably next week. But like I said,
remember what I told you. God's not done with her yet. So yep. If he's not done, that means you're not. That means your brother's not. Yep. Shout out to your brother. Shout out to his wife. Shout out to everybody. That you dope. God's not done yet. It's not your choice when or where that is. It's not even your mother's mm-hmm. choice either. So stay strong. Keep doing what you're doing, and don't give up. Because your dad wouldn't want you to. And that
is a responsibility in of itself.
Make him, make that man proud. So keep doing it. And next time we do this, like I said, we'll do it live, and then we'll keep it moving.
Yeah, we'll definitely keep it moving. So we'll see y'all next week. We'll figure out the day and time. It could be the same day, same time. We'll figure it out up behind the scenes. But we really do appreciate you guys for sharing, for listening, for being active in the comments. You know what I'm saying? And next week is going to be another real conversation. And just be prepared. If you got to take notes, bring your notepad, because we, like I said, we're covering the healthcare proxies, we're covering power of attorneys, we're covering life insurance beneficiaries, we're covering everything that you're going to need to be prepared for sickness, things that you may not know. You might know, but you may not know.
Yeah.
And if you don't have these certain things in place, it's going to put your loved one at risk as well as yourself. So, rock with us. I appreciate you guys. Joel, thank you for collaborating with me on this particular conversation. I'm only doing this, you know, you came to me and you said you wanted to really do it. So you got me doing this out here, sharing my whole life, man. But listen, man, I appreciate you, brother. And we'll do this again next week, Eric.
Absolutely, brother.